Hello, everyone, and welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European Macro Research at Natixis, and with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello, also from my side. So today we want to discuss the developments in two countries that have grabbed the headlines in this week in Europe. That is Italy and the UK. Although the reasons for making it into headlines were quite different, elections in the case of Italy, and the announcement of fiscal measures in the UK, there seems to be an underlying common theme in both countries, and that is the medium-term growth outlook and the underlying fiscal position. So we shall have a look at both of these issues in our podcast today. But before moving on to the main topic, what is the news on the data front, Dirk?
Yeah, so far this week, rather quiet. We had the German IFO that more or less mimicked the decline we've seen in the PMI. So business sentiment clearly going south and consistent, I think, with a recession unfolding. We'll have later this week, we're recording this ahead of Friday, the inflation data for September, which will be very important, but we'll discuss that, I guess, then next week. So let's move on to our main topic.
Yeah, now let's have a look at the events in Italy and the UK. We shall briefly recapitulate what has happened and then try to discuss the more fundamental underlying causes of these events. So let's start with Italy. So the big topic in Italy this week were certainly the national elections. And as previously indicated by the polls, the extreme right-wing party Brothers of Italy of Giorgia Meloni was the relative winner of the Italian parliamentary elections. So they received around 26% of the votes, and together with their likely coalition partners, the Lega Nord, which received close to 9%, and Forza Italia of Berlusconi, which received around 8%, the extreme right will have a majority of seats in the parliament. And this is true for both houses. It includes the Camera and the Senate.
And the main party on the left, the Partito Democratico, received only 19% of the votes. And the Five Star Movement received 15%. Interesting was the large split across the country in terms of party preferences, with the North voting largely right, to the right, and the South voting mainly for the Five Star Movement, perhaps tempted by the basic income promise, and some center-north regions mainly voted for the Partito Democratico. The president of the Italian Republic, Sergio Mattarella, will now ask Giorgio Meloni to form a government.
Yes, and prior to the elections, there were, and in fact there still are, concerns that the new Italian government may choose a confrontational course against Europe, in particular against any fiscal recommendations coming out of Brussels. This said, markets have treated the Italian election outcome largely as a non-event, at least thus far.
Yeah, non-event is certainly not the correct description for how markets have reacted to the announcement of a new mini budget by the British finance minister, termed by himself a fiscal event. Labeled as a new growth plan, the Chancellor announced an energy price guarantee that will provide financial support for households to cope with exploding energy bills. They cancelled the planned hike in the corporate tax, leaving it now at 19%. A cut in the basic income tax rate to 19% from currently 20%. And a cut in the top income tax rate from 45% to 40%.
Yeah, so the market reacted quite violently to these announcements. The pound, for example, recorded one of its biggest daily declines against the US dollar, falling from around 1.12 US dollars to 1.08 US dollars on Friday. It weakened further temporarily to around 1.04 before then stabilizing at around 1.08 US dollars. The Bank of England announced to hold an emergency meeting, but the meeting did not lead to any specific announcement.
And the bond market showed a similarly extreme reaction, with the 10-year rate rising from around 3.8% to almost 4.2% last Friday. The sell-off continued thereafter, and 10-year rates now stand above 4.5%. It seems that the rise in UK rates triggered, at least to some extent, also sell-off in other European markets. What's remarkable in this context is the fact that Italian interest rates increased less than UK rates over the last couple of days, and this despite Italy electing a right-wing populist government.
Yes, and markets, of course, can overshoot and sometimes have, as you often emphasize, Dirk, a neurotic tendency at times. But the combination of rising interest rates and of a weaker currency is clearly a negative verdict by financial markets regarding the outlook for the UK economy. The pressure for markets arrives in a situation where the UK is already running substantial current account deficit alongside with fiscal deficits.
Now, although the events in Italy and the UK seem to have, taken on the surface, little in common, we think that there is nevertheless a common underlying macroeconomic theme. In both cases, financial market participants are focused on questions of debt sustainability. The impact of the measures announced by the UK Chancellor on the deficit are difficult to estimate at this point, not least as they depend on the interest rate at which the government will be able to borrow. The Institute of Fiscal Studies estimates, however, that the total net borrowing could rise to around 7.5% of GDP this year and then go to 5% next year. These are quite horrendous numbers, given that obviously the debt level has already increased quite a bit due to the pandemic.
Yeah, and somewhat tellingly, the Office of Budget Responsibility, an independent UK agency that assesses the fiscal outlook, was asked to assess the mini budget, but it will present its new forecasts only in November, on November 23. So that remains to be seen what they say. Now, with respect to Italy, we will have to wait for a new government to actually form and to see what kind of new budget it will propose and what the fiscal risks are that might come with this budget. So then let's discuss a little bit about debt sustainability in both countries. How justified are the widely different market reactions and the concerns about debt sustainability in Italy and the UK?
Both the UK and Italy have seen, like many other countries, a sharp deterioration in their fiscal position as the pandemic struck. The 2021 UK fiscal deficit stood at 7.3% of GDP, and in Italy, very similar at 7.2% of GDP. Of course, this is only a snapshot and does not say much about the longer-term fiscal outlook and debt sustainability. Debt sustainability is also a somewhat elusive concept with no generally accepted definition. Yet one that is useful is the requirement that the debt to GDP ratio does not embark on an explosive path.
Yes, and given this requirement, there are then essentially three macroeconomic variables that are of interest because they determine whether or not government debt is in fact on such a sustainable path. Number one, there is the primary deficit, that is the deficit excluding interest payments. Number two is the nominal interest rate that the government has to pay on its old and newly issued debt. And then number three is the nominal growth rate of the economy. Nominal growth itself depends on the prevailing inflation rate and real trend growth. Trend growth in turn depends on changes of labor output, the change in the capital stock, and the so-called total factor productivity. That is the change in productivity that cannot simply be explained to more workers or more capital being used.
Yeah, for any bounded level of primary deficit, debt dynamics then remain non-explosive if a simple and famous inequality is satisfied. Nominal interest payments on government debt have to be lower than the nominal growth rate of the economy. Let's look how the relationship between nominal interest rates and nominal growth rates has developed over time in both countries.
Yeah, let's first have a look at the average interest rate. And perhaps surprisingly, this average interest rate on government debt in Italy and the UK is very similar, and these two interest rates have moved closely together over time. The average interest rate Of course, they are paid on different currencies, but if you just look at the nominal rates in these two currencies, they look very similar. The average interest rate stood around 5% in the early 2000s in both countries and steadily dropped to around 2% at the beginning of the pandemic. And between 2009 and 2015, average interest rates in the UK were about 1 percentage point lower than in Italy. But since then, they have moved again nearly similarly.
Next, let's have a look at the average nominal growth rate in comparison to that. The nominal growth rate also trended down in both economies since the year 2000. In fact, subtracting the average growth rate from the average interest rate in Italy, we find that average interest rates were 1.6% higher than growth in Italy since 2000. This, of course, would violate the debt sustainability requirement, which requires that interest rates to be below the nominal growth rate. For the UK, we also find that nominal interest rates on average exceeded nominal growth by around 0.7. These are average numbers. Of course, you can find years where growth was clearly higher than the interest rate.
So the famous inequality was violated in Italy by 1.6 percentage points and in the UK by 0.7 percentage points. And that, of course, means it's not surprising that as a result of this, the debt to GDP level steadily rose in both countries since the year 2000. Due to high interest expenditures, debt grows faster than GDP. And because there are also on top new primary deficits every year, this adds further to the increase in the debt to GDP ratio. So in 2000, the level of debt for Italy was close to 109% of GDP. And in 2019, just ahead of the pandemic, it rose to 134% of GDP. Then the pandemic pushed this number further up to around 151% of GDP at the end of 2021. That is a 42 percentage point increase in the debt to GDP ratio since the year 2000.
And things don't look much better for the UK. The UK started in 2000 with a much lower debt to GDP ratio of just 37%. But by the end of 2019, it already stood at 84%. And following the pandemic at the end of 2021, the UK number has reached 95%. This is a 58 percentage point increase in the debt to GDP number since the year 2000, and thus vastly exceeds the 42% increase seen in Italy.
And what is worrying really about this development, and perhaps also worrying markets now, is that the steady decline of interest rates seems to have come to an end. Nominal interest rates are again on the rise, but it's unclear whether nominal growth rates will follow. And already, nominal growth falls short of nominal interest rates over the past two decades. It's, of course, still unclear how lasting the current increase in nominal rates is going to be and how far it will go, but it would seem unlikely that going forward, governments can rely on the low interest rates they have experienced, say, over the past decade. And this implies that there needs to be a shift in the focus to ensure government debt sustainability, and this shift requires lifting the long-term growth rate of the economy. The only way this can happen is through a shift in productivity growth. Rising productivity growth will lift the real and nominal growth rate and thus help in lifting the growth rate above the nominal interest rate. This would allow bringing debt dynamics under control.
Yeah, with regard to long-run growth rate in productivity, the difference between Italy and the UK is quite stark. Italian productivity has been broadly stagnant for more than 20 years now, while UK productivity has been on a clear upward trend, even if it lacked productivity growth in France and Germany. The average growth rate of GDP per hour worked, a measure for productivity, from 1999 to 2019 was 0.26% in Italy and 0.93% in UK, so close to 1%. It's obvious what the new Italian government should focus on.
Right. The UK Chancellor has in fact argued that the fiscal measures he announced will lift trend growth in the UK And he's seeing this measure, these measures, as part of a supply side agenda of his government. In fact, the UK Chancellor claimed that the agreed measures would lift the UK's trend growth rate to 2.5%. Just to quote, "This will not happen overnight, but the tax cuts and reforms I've announced today, the biggest package in generations, send a clear signal that growth is our priority," he said.
And it's easy to see why the UK Chancellor thinks that it's necessary to unlock business investment. Business investment in the UK has been stagnating ever since the Brexit referendum. While the average quarterly growth rate of business investment in the UK was 1.6% from the first quarter of 2010 until the second quarter of 2016, when the Brexit referendum then took place, it was zero from there onwards until the start of the pandemic, then actually negative, but that has more to do obviously with the pandemic. To be sure, the government is not only relying on tax cuts to spur trend growth. The growth plan also includes announcement on upcoming measures on immigration, planning and infrastructure. But if and how these will implement it remains to be seen.
Yeah, so whether the plan to raise trend growth in the UK by lowering taxes will work out is of course questionable. In fact, the economics literature has not produced a lot of empirical evidence on how tax rates are connected to the long run growth trend of an economy. Really, the only paper that I could find that provides some empirical information on this front is one that looks at how inventors are affected by tax rates. So the paper has been published 2016 in the American Economic Review and is titled "Taxation and the International Mobility of Inventors." It has received a lot of attention in the literature and has been written by Akicic in Chicago, Bashlanche and Stancheva, and analyzes the international migration patterns of inventors since the 1970s. And it focuses on how changes in the net tax rate has affected the location choices of these inventors. It shows that particularly foreign investors at the very top of the quality distribution, so-called superstar inventors, are very sensitive to the top income tax rate. The elasticity of migration of these people is estimated to be about 1, meaning that the 4 percentage point tax rate decrease implemented by the UK on the top end of the income tax schedule would lead to a 4% increase in the number of superstar inventors relocating towards the UK. Of course, it will remain to be seen if this effect will really materialize in the UK, especially because other countries close by, say Ireland, also offer a 40% top income tax rate.
And the weather is not that different on both parts, which I guess is also an important factor. But now let's turn to Italy. There it seems crucial that the new government tackles Italy's long-standing productivity growth problem. It, however, seems unlikely this will happen, at least because prior governments have also not been very successful in achieving this. And the current government, and the government is likely to form, at least during the election campaign, has not really focused on that, it seems.
It could be that the next generation EU money may provide a new opportunity for Italy, as the disbursement of the money is going to be conditional on implementing certain structural improvement. This said, Meloni has repeatedly emphasized that she wants to renegotiate the plan about how the 200 billion from the EU will be spent. But our guess is that there's not going to be much flexibility on the side of the EU Commission on this front, so that most of these reforms will eventually come. Overall, lifting the long-term growth rate in Italy will be essential for ensuring debt sustainability, especially in a world with higher interest rates. And it will remain interesting to see whether the new government will be able to sufficiently internalize the necessity of achieving this.
Yeah, to sum up, I guess the events this week made clear that we are in a bit of a regime change, in that in the past, and that means during the pandemic, governments were pretty free to use fiscal policy to stabilize the economies. And that was because in the end, inflation was low, rates were low, interest rates were low, and central banks were willing to buy a lot of government debt. And that regime has ended. And we're now in a regime where monetary policy and fiscal policy are moving in opposite direction. And that is clearly a challenge also for the fiscal side. Let's see how all this plays out. And I guess we'll return to that topic at some point in the future. Thanks for your time again, Klaus. Speak to you next week.